This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is Phil Kirpin, Director of Policy at Americans for Prosperity. Phil has been closely following and been very active in opposing the Democratic version of health care reform, which, of course, earlier this week, President Obama said he wants to see done in the coming weeks. One of the big words being thrown around in terms of the process is reconciliation. But Mr. Kirpin says that's missing the forest for the trees. He says reconciliation would only be a factor after the House might end up passing the bulk of this health care legislation, which, of course, was passed by the Senate in December. And, Phil, it's always great to have you with us.
My pleasure, Greg. Great to be with you.
So what you're saying people need to keep their eye on here is that the bulk of this fight would come before reconciliation would ever be an issue.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Reconciliation is really being used as a way to convince House Democrats that it's okay to vote for the widely hated Senate-passed bill that already passed the Senate back on Christmas Eve. And actually, the first step forward will be to have the House pass that bill exactly as it passed the Senate, with the Louisiana Purchase, the Cornhusker kickback, vast new taxes, mandates, hundreds of new bureaucracies, and so on. And then, and only then, after it has been enacted into law, supposedly, the Senate will come back and use reconciliation to fix the bill in various ways, including getting rid of the abortion funding for STUPAC and taking out some of the more egregious pork and so on and so forth. But there are no guarantees that the Senate will actually do anything to improve or fix the bill once the House has passed it into law. Once they take that House vote, the president can sign it, and they've accomplished 99.9% of what they want. Maybe they'll tweak it with some changes around the edges by reconciliation, but if it gets that far, frankly, it won't make that much difference whether they do that or not, because they'll already have their health care bill passed.
So it'll only be slightly worse or slightly better, depending on your perspective. The damage has been done.
Exactly.
So in terms of the fight to come here, we were just talking with a member yesterday. Nancy Pelosi says she has the votes, but the member was saying, look, if she had the votes, we'd be voting right now. Some say that the fight over abortion, because folks like Bart Stupak don't really believe the Senate will ever vote for his type of language, could hold this up. What are you seeing here? Obviously, this all boils down to what the Democrats want to do.
It's very, very tight. If the 39 Democrats who voted no last time on the previous House version vote no again, Nancy Pelosi would be exactly one vote short, because Joseph Gow, the one Republican who voted for it last time, will not do so this time. And they've lost three members, Robert Wexler and Neil Abercrombie, to retirement, and Mirtha passed away. So they're sitting at 216 if the same 39 Democrats vote no again. They need 217 for a majority. They would be one vote short. I expect that we'll see a few people switch in each direction. Maybe some of the retiring Democrats who don't have to face voters who voted no last time may switch to yes, but I expect many who previous yeses may switch to no, including Stupak and his group. Really, the only way Bart Stupak and the other pro-life Democrats can vote for this bill is if they believe the president and Harry Reid will somehow come back and take the abortion funding out afterwards. I wouldn't trust them to be able to do that, and I'm not sure they could deliver that even if they wanted to over Barbara Boxer's filibuster. And so, yeah, I think it's going to be tight. It's down to the wire. It might just be a couple of votes in either direction. But it looks like where it stands right now, Nancy Pelosi does not yet have the votes. I think they're targeting the week of the 15th, so about a week and a half from now, sometime during that week, I expect a House vote, and it's going to be down to the wire. I hope everyone who cares about this is writing letters, making phone calls, doing everything they can to make sure their member of the House knows they ought to vote now.
Phil, just to follow up on a couple of points you made, specifically about the abortion debate, you mentioned a potential Boxer filibuster. Would that still be in play if reconciliation is being used?
Well, it would not be. If they did it in a reconciliation vehicle, it would not be subject to filibuster. However, reconciliation is part of the budget process, and it probably cannot be used for abortion language. It would not be subject to filibuster, but it would be subject to a Byrd rule challenge as not germane to the budget process, and that would require the same 60 votes to waive that as it would to stop a filibuster. So procedurally, it wouldn't be a filibuster if they tried to do it under reconciliation, but it would still be subject to a 60-vote vote, and I don't see how they could get that.
And the other issue that is probably giving Stupak some pause, and he doesn't believe the Senate will actually do this from the comments that we've heard, certainly, is because that Ben Nelson tried to insert language relatively similar to the Stupak language during the Senate debate, and it got shot down, correct?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Look, the only way the Stupak Democrats can vote for this, in my view, is if they are tricked, if they are fooled by Democratic leadership to believe this will be fixed. I do not believe that there actually will be changes on that issue after the fact, because once this passes, there's no leverage. It'll be too late for him to try to force the Senate to fix it if he's already voted for their bill. And so just the sequencing of it makes it very hard, I think, for them to actually address any of the problems with this bill after it's already been passed.
Phil, your organization, as we've both mentioned, has been active in this debate and obviously very active in opposition to it. The argument from the conservative side, at least by many Republicans in Congress, start over, go step by step. The president said earlier this week, it's obvious there's an impasse on how much government involvement there should be in the healthcare arena. So more time really isn't going to bring anybody together. How do you respond to his argument against starting over and building this step by step?
Well, I think he's right to the extent that a lot of Democrats want to see much, much more government control, much more centralization of power when it comes to health care. They think that individuals, patients and doctors will make bad choices, wasteful choices, be too expensive. We need to have bureaucracies controlling resource use. The vast majority of Americans have a different vision, and I think closer to the Republican vision of trying to get a better functioning marketplace where patients and doctors are really in control of their own dollars and their own choices. So they do want to go in different directions. That said, I think there is a middle ground with some common sense incremental changes, things like medical liability reform, things like cutting down waste and abuse in Medicare, things like opening up more choices and competition so people can choose from more insurance companies by buying from out of state. A lot of the common sense ideas that Republicans have been talking about, I think, actually would command bipartisan support and would be an incremental approach that could work. I don't think that sort of the overarching Democratic approach of a vast 2,000, 3,000 page redesign of everything with hundreds of bureaucracies is amenable to bipartisan compromise, but I also think that's some good evidence that that's the wrong approach. So the president's right that his approach to this is really not something that you can compromise with Republicans on, but I think that's just evidence that his approach is a bad one.
Real quickly, a small controversy, at least some say a big controversy, with the president offering a federal appeals court judgeship to the brother of a Democratic congressman who voted no on the House plan and is still on the fence on this one. Some say it's a quid pro quo. Others say, look, this guy's qualified. It just happens to be a coincidence. How do you read it?
Well, I mean, look, it certainly has at least the appearance of impropriety. I don't know for sure whether anything improper occurred, but you can't blame the public for being skeptical when we've seen so many corrupt backroom deals cut at every stage of this process. And I think that is another very good reason that we ought to start over and do it the way the president promised originally, in public with the cameras rolling, with everything above board.
And Phil, as we started off saying in the beginning, it all comes down to this House vote coming up, if there ever is a vote, and they can get the votes in the weeks ahead. Thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Phil Kirpin, Director of Policy at Americans for Prosperity. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.